So welcome everybody. It's November 13th, 2023, and I'm Daniel Four here with Ray Abilea and Omid Safi. And it's I'm glad you're here. Let me say it like that. And before we open Ritual Space, I want to share just a few practical things about our time today. The intent of this gathering is to be informed about what's happening in Palestine, Israel, Gaza, to be hopefully resourced a little by gathering in good company in a way that enlivens us, energizes us to continue to take action for a ceasefire, for lasting peace, and also to have the opportunity in community to extend prayer for what's happening in complement to tangible action, knowing that it's never a substitute for tangible action. I'll say that in our 90 minutes together, we'll have at least one space for practice together and at least one space for practice with three different spaces, one that I'll anchor, one that Omid will anchor, and one that Ray will anchor. Omid's space will be Muslim-led and open to all. And Ray's space will be Jewish-led and open to all, so you can select where you want to be at that time. We'll keep the chat off because I think it's obvious why we're keeping the chat off. And I would just say, if I don't imagine this would be needed, but that anyone from the team could remove anyone from the event if the way you would show up isn't supportive to kind ritual space. And remember, we're recording, so if you share, then that'll be on the recording. And there's no cost to gather, but we ask that you do anything tangible in support of peace as an exchange for the time. So with that, let me turn it over to Ray to offer an opening prayer, and then Omid will follow with some sharing about what's happening so that we can engage in practice from a place of being informed. Thank you all. Thanks for doing what helps you to stay grounded and connected to your center during our time.
Thank you, Daniel, for bringing us together in this way. I invite you to flutter your eyes closed or get present in your body in whatever ways are most supportive to you as we pray in together. Holy One, Shekhinah, Allah, merciful, compassionate one of so many names. Thank you for awakening our bodies this day. Thank you for awakening us from the slumber of distraction or numbness or overwhelm so we could arrive in this space and be present together. First Nations peoples of the places where we each are in this moment, we offer such great respect to you. Wise well ancestors, welcome and thank you for your many gems and for bringing us to this life. More than human world, deep gratitude for your myriad teachings that help us learn how to live in balance. Holy One, please today help our hearts open just a little bit more. Soften any parts that are frozen that we might pour out our sorrow. Hear us in our prayers for the preservation and thriving of life on this one precious planet. Remembering your divine spark is within each and every one of us, may we extend a spark of love and care to all who are suffering in critical condition right now, hungry, thirsty, and in need of safe shelter everywhere, and especially in Gaza. And on this particular day also, to all who are in captivity or behind bars, to all who are feeling their hearts also caged by fear or distrust. And help us, please God, drop into deep listening. Forgive our imperfect language. We know that words are spells, and as we speak, so it is. And as we fumble toward freedom, may we be gentle and have mercy on ourselves with our imperfection. As we strive for precision in our speech, please, God, help us weave a brave space to be in our vulnerable hearts here today. And together, may we weave a sukkah shalom, a shelter of peace, so that we may mourn together and organize together. May we learn the ancient and new practices that connect us with our humanity, that help us be compassionate beings, even as grief, rage, and despair bear down upon us. Holy One of so many names, praying into that Olam Haba, that world that is possible, where greed is transformed into economies of love, where beings, all beings, can be free, where healing and harmony of all relations can begin and continue. May our tears gather in a united river so that, like Dr. King envisioned, justice can roll down like waters and righteousness like a mighty stream. Ken yehi ratzon, may it be so. Amen.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, in the name of the One whose love, care, and mercy enfolds the whole universe the way that a mother's love and mercy enfolds an unborn child. Thank you, friends, for coming together with a desire to bring our love out into the public spaces, starting with where the wounds are and where the suffering is so great. I have a very simple hope in this gathering, which is, what does it mean for us to try to hold on together to two truths? And the two truths are not the Israeli narrative and the Palestinian narrative. It's actually something far more grand and yet more simple. What does it mean to state with our breath that every single life is luminous, every single life is sacred, every being is made in the image of the One, and that in this world that we both create and inhabit, there are also vast asymmetries of power, of privilege, of suffering. And these are both wings that we need to soar with. We're not going to settle for a simple kind of all lives matter statement. You're all smart enough, if you're here, to know the dangers of any kind of a singular narrative. That's where humanity is weakened, when we insist only on one narrative. So what I want to do is I want to actually start with something quite simple, tangible, which is in this one particular hospital in Gaza, where the newborn infants are now without parents and in some cases without medical care. There's no electricity, and the incubators that they need to keep them warm is no longer functioning. I want us to figure out, what does love have to say at a time like this? I will preface this by saying that I have an ethical commitment to not showing pictures of dead human beings. The very least that we can do is to give them the dignity that they were robbed of in their last breath. So I'm not going to be trying to tug at anyone's heart by showing them bloody images. This is the reality of what Gaza has been looking like for the last 35 days. You can multiply the scene by 1,000. And this is what is happening now. The forced transfer of over 1 million people, many of whom are the children and the grandchildren of previous generations of refugees. What does love have to say at a time like this? As we saw in 1948, the population transfer, as it was called, today we call it ethnic cleansing, of 750,000 people. Today, we are witnessing the population transfer of 2.2 million human beings, over half of whom are children. That's what's going on the ground. What does love have to say? There are people like this woman whose right leg was amputated without anesthesia. And she's released from the hospital because the hospitals in Gaza, all 39 of them, are being bombarded by American taxpayer-funded, American-built bombs dropped from Israeli warplanes. What have we got to say? The pediatric children's unit in Gaza was hit by Israeli warplanes. The maternity wards in Shifa Hospital and others. What does it mean to be a human being of heart and soul and conscience, and to not turn away and not to simply fall back into the whataboutery that is far too common in our age? That's at a hospital. You remember all the controversy about the first one? Did Israel bomb it? Was it misfired Hamas rockets? Well, there doesn't seem to be any debate or discussion now in the 30 other hospitals that are being bombarded day and night. I think all I want to do as I end is to give you one snapshot of what has happened to Gaza. Our hearts are on the ground, they're with the people. But if we had the luxury of being raised above the ground, this gives you some sense of the indiscriminate amount of violence that is being unleashed on human beings. More than half of all the homes, all the buildings in Gaza have already been bombed. Inshallah, in the time that we'll have, we'll get a chance to talk more about where do we go from here? What have we got to say? I think I want to end with what I started. What does it mean to hold that the life of every single one of the 1,200 Israelis who were killed on October 7th is sacred and precious, made in the image of God, and that the life of every single one of the 2.2 Palestinians who are being ethnically cleansed, 11,000 of them already killed, over 5,000 children, equally precious, equally sacred, equally made in the image of God.
We thank you for inviting us into such deep witness. I would just add a presencing for those families who are grieving and worried about their loved ones who are behind bars, and particularly to speak to the over 7,000 Palestinian political prisoners held in jail right now, and I believe an additional 2,000 people who have been arrested in the last couple weeks. So when we speak about hostages and people being held in custody, may we also remember those who have been held for years, often without sentencing. And I presence to Israeli families who are in a state of fear or trauma response, including my own in this time, in that heartbreaking openness. And I want to name specifically in this space that this assault, this brutality being waged on Palestine is not only in Gaza. Of course, we know also in the occupied West Bank that settlers and soldiers and an increasing number of joint militias are increasing a campaign of ethnic cleansing in what's called Area C, part of the occupied Palestinian territories. And that we hear less in the news about, but I want to presence our kindred who are within the boundary of Israel, and who are facing repression and violence, the activists who are being beaten, the Israeli police who are stopping random Palestinian people on the street to check their social media for incitement. To imagine what would we do if we were in any one of these places right now. And I want to also presence rising anti-Arab and anti-Muslim hate speech and crimes this past month in other places in the world, particularly here in the United States, and the need to tend to care for and speak out against any kind of hate speech or hate crimes. And of course, also to incidents of anti-Semitism and to incidents of rising anti-Semitism by the same white supremacists who apply racist ideology to all minority groups. And also by those who, as Israel does, have a false notion that the criticism of the state of Israel is anti-Semitic. Of course, we know it's not. And it feels just important in this space as we come together to co-weave in such a beautiful, multi-religious way to maybe state the total obvious that this is not a conflict between Jewish people and Muslim people, that we've lived together in harmony for so long, that many Palestinians are Christian and many Jews, such as myself, stand for Palestinian liberation. But as you so beautifully shared, Omid, this is such a struggle of the powerful superpowers, nuclear armed superpower, and an oppressed people. The statistic that most sticks with me is that a child is killed every 10 minutes in Gaza right now, which means that in the course of our prayer time today, 9 more children will pass on. This is unimaginable to be the parent of such a child. How to imagine this? I just one quote to share. Presencing to those who are speaking out also in this moment. On October 28th, Craig Mokhiber, the director of the New York Office of the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights, resigned from his job. And in his resignation letter, he wrote, "What we are watching is genocide. Everyone should be standing up, objecting, and calling for an immediate ceasefire and an end to genocide." Taking Craig Mokhiber's words to heart as we witness and pray together.
Thank you both. I don't have so much to add by way of just saying a few things about what's happening. Maybe the only two things I would add is the United States is so deeply implicated and sharing of the responsibility of what's happening. I've never felt such an acute sense of betrayal, and there are a lot of reasons to feel betrayal as an American. And I would wish for a greater outcry among Americans, and including an understanding of the ways that Christian Zionism, which itself seems very anti-Semitic to me, is a driver much more than Jewish Zionism in the United States of the backing of Israel. And to say that the rhetoric around terror and terrorism has never felt so transparent to me, in the sense that what is being communicated on the level of action is that lighter skinned lives matter more than darker skinned lives, in a very straightforward colonialist white supremacist enactment of genocide in a way that is re-traumatizing, terrorizing, and intended to reassert old racist paradigms on earth in ways that really badly impact not only the people directly in the line of fire, but millions and millions and millions of other people as well. So just an acknowledgement of that impact as well. And yeah. So with that attempt to name a little what's unfolding, I would like to ask Omid and Ray if you would be willing to share for just a few minutes from the heart about, you know, as people who are deeply committed to right action and a just world, and also spiritual people, people of faith, where do you notice yourself turning? How, like, what's one or two things in the last month that has felt really important for you that would possibly be helpful for others to hear before we go into direct practice? Because part of what we're headed to in just a few is a time of personally directly resourcing with the sacred, however you do that. So yeah, do you want to say a thing about that? And I could try to say a thing as well.
Mead, would you like to go ahead?
I would love to benefit by listening to you first.
Yeah. Gladly. In my life, I've mostly shown up as an activist and an organizer. I've made speeches, prepared keynotes, talked with CNN, Fox News, MSNBC, etc., with smart, savvy talking points. That's not what we're here to do. I appreciate the invitation from Daniel to be in our heartbreak, to be vulnerable and raw. And it's not easy. I feel, having been involved in this struggle for only a short time, it was only the bombing of Operation Castlet in 2008 when I was finally woken up to what was going on, to begin to unlearn the Zionism I had learned as a young person. So I know how little how much I still have to learn, but in the last 15 years, working so hard to support the freedom of Palestinian people, this is heartbreaking. There are no words for it. I know many of you, like me, wake up in the middle of the night to check your phone, your Facebook. Are your friends in Gaza still alive? My coworkers have lost family members, children. It feels sometimes there's not enough time to have time for grief. It's so important to make space for it, and yet the organizing is so urgent. The flood of social media, the quickness of everyone to be deputized as a police officer and cancel each other on social media for saying this or not that, and in the midst of such atrocity. So there's tremendous anxiety, there's tremendous fear, there's tremendous heartbreak. And what steadies me in this time is to lay my body on the earth and to be in action. Grace Paley said the only recognizable feature of hope is action. And I'll just say at one of the demonstrations in San Francisco, we had 50,000 people in the streets the Saturday before last. And I was debating bringing my husky pup. I thought, I don't know, he might get agitated, so many people. But my friend said, no, bring him. And it was so amazing to watch people co-regulate with this beloved big furry creature and come over and take photos with him and say, oh, is he with us? Is he for freedom? You know, and I just remembered the humanity that we need, that connection with the more than human world, that we need tenderness, that often when people call me shouting and screaming and upset with something, they just need to be listened to and have a hug. And probably I need more of the same. And I'm buoyed by how we float on these waters of grief together toward that Olam Haba, that place of justice and equality, by sharing in spaces like this one. So thank you again for making the space, Daniel.
Thank you. Thank you so much, my new sister. It's one of the, if there is a glimmer of light in times like this, is that sometimes you feel like you're finding old friends for the first time, and people whose heart resonates in their own tradition, in their own community, to the same vibration as yours. You know, I've lived through a little bit in my life. I've lived through a revolution in Iran, lived through 8 years of a war with Iraq, and memories as a child and a teenager of experiencing bombing. I know what it feels like when bombs fall a street away from you. And 9/11 and the war on Iraq, war on Afghanistan, somehow this one is hitting me different. And it might be the complicity of our own government. It could also be the sheer humanity that is so readily available for anybody who wishes to see it. And I break down every day in tears. I'm supposed to be the strong spiritual teacher who has comforting things to say and knows which sayings of the Prophet Muhammad to quote, assuring people that the children who are martyred are resurrected as birds of paradise and they encircle God's throne. And all I know is that when I look at the pictures of these babies, I see my own children. They look like my children. They have my children's eyes. They have their curly hair. So I hug my babies a little tighter. I kiss them a few thousand times more than I would on any given day. And I feel an ocean away. The trauma and the pain also seeping into my own body. Waking up in the middle of the night with that sensation of pins and needles and feeling like your whole being is on fire. And so I pray. I pray because I don't know what else to do. I pray for the children. I pray for the fathers who are digging through rubbles. I pray for the ones who are frightened and angry about having loved ones taken hostage. I pray for the Israeli families who never even had a chance to sit properly in grief, in mourning, in Shiva, before their trauma was weaponized on people who had nothing to do with it. And I know in this day and age of social media, where, as Ray said, so many people are trying to keep score, and it's tempting to go out there and look for the most racist, hideous, vile thing that the people from what we come to think of as the other side have had to say. And it's there, right? If you want to look for the one crazy uncle spouting anti-Semitic thing in some pro-Palestinian rally, I bet you can find it. And if you want to watch IDF soldiers doing a TikTok dance about how we're going to flatten all of Gaza, you can find that too. I think the only thing that has brought comfort to me is to look for the light and to look for the best. And so I stay grounded in my own tradition, but I also remember the words of people like Rabbi Heschel. There's one thing that's forbidden: despair. And he would say that when he couldn't pray, because every time he would open up his prayer books, there he would see images of the children of Vietnam burning. When he couldn't pray, he would march. And he would pray with his feet. That's all I can try to do at this time, is to pray as much as possible, join my voice with the voice of you. And to pray with my feet, pray with my hands, pray with my tongue, pray with my mind, and never stop praying through the heart.
Thank you both. I'll try to say a thing also. You know, like both of you shared differently. I've been rocked, disorganized, reactive, tender, trying not to center my own process, but also like raw about things. Listening to a talk from Gabor Mate's son Daniel the other day, and how he was saying how people need to do different things. Some people need to grieve, some people need to talk. And so I've been talking, I've been saying things, speaking out. Hopefully that's helpful. I don't know. I know that it's my way of trying to stay whole within it, is to do something. So I'm a doer. I didn't really have a good cry until I was at the first protest that I attended, at least in Granada here, for the BDS movement. And just being in another group of people, like families, people from all different backgrounds, just felt safe enough to touch a little bit of what's happening. And I try not to block that. I feel aware in my capacity as someone focused on ancestral healing how much what is playing out is the transfer of generations of especially European Christian anti-Semitism onto the Palestinian people for no good reason for them, but I see my own ancestors' complicity in things. And so I feel like I have something to bring to the table, at least. But when things are so, when there are people dying, children being killed while we're having this meeting, it's hard to get to the next layer of stuff. That's the only thing that needs to be the focus in many ways until that stopped. There's no other conversation that starts. And I feel also sadness for the way that until our intra-human supremacies can settle, it's hard to face together the ecological catastrophe that we're unleashing. War is really bad for the earth. I had another good cry when people were sharing their pain about not being able to get to the olives. So war is bad for the others as well. It's bad for the dead. It keeps the dead stuck. So, yeah, so I've been trying to make time to grieve, and I'm a doer, so I'm trying to do things, rushing around and stressing out our team a little bit, rushing around, but yeah. But like Omid, being a dad is different, feels different. Explaining to our child when she's like, no es una guerra, es un genocidio. She's picking up chants. She's like, Papi, what's the difference between a genocide and a war? Which one's worse? And I'm like, okay, you're five. Your limbs are intact. Let's have an age-appropriate conversation about it, because you're not different or better than any of the other kids. So just being with that. That's a word about where I'm at. Let's prioritize the time here for a bit of guided practice. And I'm scheduled to begin that. And then I will turn the second half of that practice over to Omid. And the intent of this practice is really just to to make sure that you're resourcing in community with your direct connection with the sacred, however that is for you. So join me if you would. Like, gift yourself a few minutes of time if you can. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Begin, if you would, by noticing your own heart, if that's not already obvious, and your breath, and your belly, and your feet. Just do what helps you to be present in your body. And from that place, notice your direct connection to the sacred, to the earth, to your ancestors or guides, God directly. See if you can feel the ways that you already connect with the holy. And from that place of being rooted in your body and connected, hold intent that your personal space is clear or free from negativity, from others' projection, from any heaviness that you don't need to be holding personally right now. Let there be just a moment of breathing out or letting go of what you don't need to be holding right now. From that place, affirm a layer of protection, a boundary around your space, and that only what is loving and welcome is allowed within that space, in your daily life and in your service and your engagement, that you're staying resourced and protected. And from there, let your attention rest for another moment with that direct line of connection from within to the sacred. And see if you can allow for a moment or two of just recharge in this specific moment of not needing to exert effort, but just being held by the bigger forces. Just letting yourself be for a minute. in a time of such turbulence and death and war, I would invite you in this moment to notice, with that direct connection to the sacred, the quality of abundance also. And that there is a well, a spring, an uprising, and that you can personally be renewed and recharged, and that your personal cup can overflow, and that your service can come from your overflow. And that this supports effective service, and it allows you to stay engaged next year at this time, next decade at this time. And so see if you can find that quality of recharge and giving from overflow. Staying connected to that, I'll turn it over to Omid.
Going to continue with the practice of centering ourselves, recentering ourselves, coming back to the heart. By sitting with that divine gift that mediates between our body and our spirit, and that's the breath. What I'll invite you to do is to sense your body. Sense where your feet are touching the ground, where your thighs are resting on a chair. Perhaps your back is leaning on something. And in silence, observe the breath entering into your chest, expanding it, and then returning back to that ocean from which it came from. Let's take about 5 of these cycles only to observe. We don't need to hold the breath. We don't need to pause it. Just watch it. Observe it. This in-breath and out-breath cycle. You might notice that as you start to observe the breath, that your breath deepens, that you start breathing from a lower place, an expanded place in your chest, that you've been taking a lot of shallow breaths recently. And this time, when you take the next 5 cycles of the breath, notice a dear friend that has been with you, the beating of your heart. Sense it, welcome it, listen for it. And as you do, remember how we are taught that God mingles in that space between the beating of your heart and your soul. that the most on high is also the most within. So let's take five of those breaths, listening for the beating of the heart. In our tradition, there are connections between even the words for breath and the words for soul, nafs and nafas, nefesh in Hebrew. When you take in the next breaths, see if you can sense your heartbeat, not just in the lumpy flesh on your chest, but actually through your body. Perhaps a pulsation and a vibration. When you're ready, open your eyes. This is a simple practice that you can return to at different times of the day, and to remember that the breath that entered your chest, that extended your life, is linked to the breath that every other person on this planet is also breathing. It is the same air that all of our ancestors have breathed, all of the ones who have ever loved on you, all of the sages and the prophetesses whose teachings have illuminated your life, that their breath now mingles with yours. That is the same breath that washes over the olive trees and the rivers and the trees and the fallen leaves.
You know what I mean? So here's what we're gonna do now. Before long, in 10 minutes or so, we'll head into smaller, not that small, there's 500 people here, but smaller breakout spaces, meaning if you don't have a preference and you end up with me, or if you want to be with me, and then if you would like to be in a Jewish-led space, then you have the opportunity to opt in to the space Ray is anchoring, and if you want to be in a Muslim-led space, you can opt into Omid's space. So we'll do that in a few, but before we do that, two things. I was going to make space for a few folks to share, but it'll detract from the time in groups for our flow. And so I'm not going to do it. But what I'll do instead is say, if you want to send me in the chat a couple of lines, I can't guarantee I'll read it. I probably won't right now. I might share from just a few of them. But what I can do is I can share them with Ray and Omid after. So if it helps you to just express a thing, and know it will be witnessed, you could put that in the chat to me, and there's no need to do that, but you could. And in the breakout spaces, what will happen is the three of us will be anchoring more direct practice around honoring, especially the dead, but more generally, the ones who aren't being included so much in the way we're speaking of things. And that's what I want to presence now, and invite Ray and Omid to also add. And if there's something I want to bring in personally, It's that when we're in crisis, all of our valiant attempts to set down our human supremacy tend to get pushed aside, and the story about what's happening tends to become very, very, very human focused. And it's a story about pain, and it's a story about, you know, urgency and survival and my pain, no, my pain, no, my safety, no, my safety. And it can go all kinds of ways. But when we are fighting and when we are tearing one another apart through old pain and fear, the humans become very self-absorbed, and we lose track not only of the other than humans and the water and the land and the desert foxes and the olives and the many, many beautiful beings who are not human and who are our kin and our family, but also the dead. The dead may become an idea that's weaponized, or a kind of point of pride or identity, but that's different than relating with them and their fullness. And in this way, I want from our side with ancestral medicine to be sure that we are allowing for direct practice together to extend prayer for the dead and the dying. Because dying is a very vulnerable thing. Dying suddenly, dying in fear, dying. God, I just thought of the thing you shared today, Omid. Somebody pulling I think it's a young girl out of the rubble. She was saying, is in Arabic, Yami, are you taking me to the cemetery? Response is like, no, you're beautiful like the moon, you're still alive. Also, in that, part of what I hear is like, will I be forgotten? Will I be prayed for? I'll miss you. I'm not ready to die. I don't want to die yet. And so when we're just trying to survive, we're less likely to care for the dead in the ways that they need cared for. And so slowing down and including those devotions and those kinds of care is an additional thing you can do. Like after the protest, after the donation, after you've written the letters, after you've resourced your friends, and you're awake and you're thinking about it. Am I going to spend time on social media? Because I kind of got the gist of how bad it is. Or am I going to drop in and actually just be in presence with all the ones who are really surprised that they died today? Or maybe they knew it was coming and they died today. So I wonder, Ray and Omid, if there are things you want to say about this, about the way that our human trauma, I mean, that's what I want to say about it, is how our human trauma kicks us back into our human supremacy. And that's all we can think about. The range of who of our loving gets more narrow. And so, and then we have, you know, you want to help the earth. We need to end colonialism. And end white supremacy. We need everyone to have enough food. So that's inseparable from all the earth changes we need. That said, I don't want to chew up all the time because we want to actually do the thing. Ray and Omid, anything from the heart about all that and why it matters before we do that?
Well, and I'll share. So Omid and I are checking in, you know, in the green room here about who would like to share first. And we're both being so generous with each other. Thank you, Omid. I want to say that after devoting so many years of my life to activism, coming to awareness about the deep work of intergenerational trauma healing has come to be a central point of how I think we create change in the world, because we cannot only be in the present moment. We are always with our people for generations in the room with us as we organize and try to live more harmoniously. So to the question of trauma, I see how incredibly crucial the work that you do, Daniel, is, and the work of people engaged in Jewish ancestral healing. From my perspective as a member of the Jewish community, my teachers, Teya Mashir and Rabbi Tirzah Firestone and others doing this work. And it's incredibly apparent to me in the last month how much work there is to do around that. And I think just to impart one thing that I try to remember when I'm out in the streets or on social media or talking with a friend, is that my understanding of neuroscience is that we cannot operate in our prefrontal cortex and our rational mind at the same time that we are in our limbic system, our fight, flight, freeze response, which means that we cannot engage about what's actually happening or see it until we peel back those veils and become co-regulated. And I really appreciate that practices that you both offered around this, how important that is. And I'll just say that in the breakout room, if you choose to feel called to step into Jewish-led space, we'll explore some of our rich Jewish technologies around grieving. We will have an opportunity to say Kaddish, the prayer we say to remember the dead together. And that grief, as we know, is non-linear, and it takes a lot of different emotions, including anger, frustration. So like Rumi reminds us to welcome all of those emotions as humble guests in the guest house, and to make space for them, and that we make space for them so that our action also and our organizing can come from a different type of a place, a more rooted place, a more heart-centered place. You might be mourning intimately family members or kindred that you're grieving today, or maybe they are people, total strangers you've never met many miles away, but grateful that we can come together in this remembrance and honoring. And I just wanted to say one other thing. I've heard that family members in Gaza are writing their names on their arms and legs so that in case they are found, they will be identified. And I have seen some activists in solidarity writing their names on their bodies. It's just unimaginable, but may we say their names, may they be remembered.
Thank you. Thank you, Daniel. Thank you. Thank you, Ray. This is the part where I'm just going to say, I will fail. I will fail in having something so uplifting that it will make it not hurt. I don't know that magic Sufi poem. I've spent 35 years reading Rumi. I don't think that's the job of a spiritual tradition, is to make us numb to human suffering. That's the difference between New Age used car salesman and a genuine spiritual path that says, this is going to hurt because your heart's sensitivity is going to be cranked up to the maximum, and that the goal is not some detached notion of happiness. Sign up for this seminar and your life will be happy. Say this magic formula 12 times a day and you will be happy. No, that's called marijuana. That's different. The only goal of the tradition that I know is an assurance that the God of the mountaintop is also the God of the valley bottom, and that we are never alone and we're never abandoned, and that not only God, but this lineage of saints, of prophets, of prophetesses, that they are with you, they grieve with you and with us. Yeah, Ray, I've also seen the parents writing the names on children. Of course, in the Jewish tradition, we all know what it's like to have numbers and things written on your body. This binds us as opposed to dividing us. And the one that I'm grieving over is this new acronym that's coming out of the hospitals. In short, it is WCNSF. Wounded child, no surviving family. Right? A child whose every loved one has been killed. I want you to see one of them just so this doesn't remain so abstract, right? She has a name. Her name is Julia. Her father's name, I don't know the mother's name. Her father's name was Mossab. And she lives. But she lives without the love of the ones who have raised her. In terms of practices that Daniel asked us to do, in our tradition, until very recently, we did not have funeral homes. We didn't have undertakers. Every single person who would die would be washed by their own family, men by men, women by women, and we would dig a hole wrapped in a simple shroud and be trusted to the belly of our first mother, the earth. We're not there yet. We have bodies that have not been identified in Israel. We've got thousands of bodies, perhaps tens of thousands more, yet to be found under these cement rubbles. Can't even get to our rituals until the bombing stops. All of us deserve the time to wash the bodies, to wrap them in a shroud, to trust them to the earth, and to say prayers for them. And so in that absence, we can at least pray for the ease for their soul that was robbed of their bodies.
Thank you both. Here's what's going to happen now. Michael, our tech host, is going to open the option for you to select if you wish to be in one of the breakout rooms. If not, you'll remain here with me. So we'll allow for a moment or two of that shift, and then we'll come back at 25 after the hour and share a few ways to take tangible next steps, and then weave out with some prayer. So here's my sense of how to use our 15 minutes together is we could do it in just a moment, another drop-in like we did before, but I will, when that happens, invite you to call around you whatever powers you already know and trust. God, the ancestors, your spirits, the earth, you know, love, call around you your big powers. And what I'll invite is choosing, if you wouldn't mind, if it feels forced, then don't do it, but consider choosing a facet of the larger trouble where you want to sit in prayer with. And so I would suggest probably one of these five. One is the death, the suffering, the dead in Gaza and the Palestinians. And not to make it so polarized, but like if your easeful attention is more there, then let your prayers be there. If your easeful attention is more with those in Israel and those who have died, the 1,200 who have died, and the others who are, you know, suffering, then let it be there. If, but with the dead, if your attention goes to the fear and confusion and turbulence among the living humans, and you want to add prayers there, then let it be there. And the other two that occur to me are four, like the fourth is, if you're feeling in a kind of fierce mode, you might with your spirits give attention to the opportunistic, war-loving, hateful supremacist powers that move through and as humans and continue what's happening. That's, you know, don't get too up in the moving parts, but if you want to be with your connection to the sacred, giving attention to what's driving this, you could turn attention carefully there in a prayerful way. And finally, the land, the other than humans, all of the spirits and souls also of the pets that have been blown apart, the dead who are not human, the suffering of the land and the earth. You don't have to compartmentalize all that, of course, but I'm saying the dead, the other dead, the living, the forces driving what's happening, or the land. Any of those are fine places. So let's take a bit of a team approach since we're 250 people here. And those listening in after, just notice where you want to be with your prayers. The main thing is you don't have to hold all of it all at once in each moment. You can let other people go where they're going to go and you go where you're going to go, and that's fine. For the next 15 minutes, may there be enough space for everybody's pain, at least here. So I'll talk you through it. Mostly don't make any effort. It's not about effort. It's ritual practice. Start by noticing your heart, noticing your belly, your feet. Just be present in your body. Stay in your body. And notice your connection to the sacred and your supportive powers, and let that be really acute and really strongly with you. And hold intent that your personal space is clear from interference, and that there's a layer of protection and containment around your space. And from that place, take a moment of just listening with your supportive powers, your ancestors, God, the earth, however it is for you. Just be in presence with them and listen about where you need to be and how you can take a few minutes to contribute with your attention and your prayers. But just listen. From that place of staying rooted in your body, connected to the sacred, clear in your energy and protected, notice where your particular love wants to flow right now. Is it with the dead, with the living, with the hazardous powers, with the land? Let yourself, with your attention, and the powers that back you, let yourself contribute with your prayers for a few, whatever way that wants to flow for you. Make sure you're staying grounded in your body and connected to the sacred. It's not through effort here. And whether or not you focus on it at all, know that there's a kind of team effort, not just in this space, but collectively. You don't have to be all the things all at once. Give yourself permission to really tend to what is before you, to the one thing that is before you. Please stay with whatever is unfolding. Honor your process. While you're tending to whatever is needed, I'm going to gently layer in a little recitation from Quran. If that is not supportive to your practice, you can mute me because it'll just be for a few minutes. A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. الحمد لله رب العالمين الرحمن الرحيم مالك يوم الدين إياك نعبد وإياك نستعين اهدنا الصراط المستقيم صراط الذين أنعمت عليهم غير المغضوب عليهم ولا الضالين آمين بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم ألم تر كيف فعل ربك بأصحاب الفيل ألم يجعل قيدهم في تضليل وأرسل عليهم طيرا أبابيل ترميهم بحجارة من سجيل فجعلهم كعصف مأكول بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم لإيلاف قريش إيلافهم رحلة الشتاء والصيف فليعبدوا رب هذا البيت الذي أطعمهم من جوع وآمنهم من خوف بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم قل هو الله أحد الله الصمد لم يلد ولم يولد ولم يكن له كفوا أحد بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم قل أعوذ برب الفلق من شر ما خلق ومن شر غاسق إذا وقب ومن شر نفاثات في العقد ومن شر حسد إذا حصد بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم قل أعوذ برب الناس ملك الناس إله الناس من شر الوسواس الخناس الذي يوسوس في صدور الناس من الجنة والناس صدق الله العظيم. take another few minutes. Honoring your limits, trusting your heart and where you need to be, staying firmly connected with the sacred as you experience it. Knowing that your presence and care matters. Start to gently hold, like start to gently shift attention in the sense that you're asking the old powers that hold up life to keep tending, to not pull away from the world, to keep leaning in with their compassion and healing. And you're also letting your own attention be especially rooted in your body and, you know, coming to a little more grounded place if you're more opened up. Take a minute and make sure that you're personally feeling, you know, at least connected to your center. It's great and welcome to be cracked open, but let it be within a range that's okay for you right now. And if it feels right, you can ask your spiritual support something like, help me to know and inhabit my specific contributions. Of course, to what's happening here and just in general around the suffering in the world. Help me to know how to participate in alignment with my gifts and my specific destiny. You can't do and be all the things. That we have a moral obligation to be a very whole version of ourselves if we can be. We're going to head back in just less than a minute to the main space, or the others will come back here. And the last thing I would say is we transition into last part of our gathering is, if it isn't already really clear to you, I imagine it is, you know, it's a marathon. It's not this, it's the settling in, you know, commit to being helpful for the next 20 lifetimes to start with. So like saying, so, you know, put your whole self in, if it's not already in, maybe it already is, you know, settle in, basically. You're not already settled, settle in a little further then. Yeah. Thank you all. Appreciate you. And I'm going to turn it back over to our co-leads here in just a moment. Just let me know, Michael, when folks are back. I could hit the open all rooms button, but I think it's your job to push the buttons.
No, everyone appears to be back.
Okay, got it. Okay, great. Open all rooms. I'm just going to close that. Everybody's back. Okay. Is Omid back as well? No, don't know if their room is back.
Yeah, everyone's here.
Okay, great. So let me turn it over to Ray and Omid to share a few words on what we can do, if you don't already know, to ground your love and care in tangible actions. And I'll say before they share that if this is overwhelming in this moment, you can come back to it on the recording or make a note and steady, daily, tangible actions really make a big difference in a collective way. So please do those things, at least one of them, on the regular. Ray and Omid.
Thank you, Daniel. Welcome back, everyone. Action is how we make our love visible in the world, one of the ways, and it is incredibly moving at this time of so much grief to see uprisings around the world right now, calling for a ceasefire, calling for affirming the life of all these little ones we've named today, calling for the preservation of families, for safety, for a just peace, and for freedom. And some of the ways that you can do that are get involved in calling your elected officials, your congresspeople. If you're here in the United States, we have power hours where we get together and call Congress together. You can write to your media and share your story and raise awareness. You can organize a teach-in. There's such a thirst right now for learning together. There's conversations happening in workplaces and on campuses to join and speak out, to remember that, like that old organizing diagram with all the little fish joining together to eat the big fish, the way that we build people power to oppose expanding empire. And specifically to my friends here in the United States, we have a special responsibility, as the blood of these bombs killing these families is on our hands as taxpayers, to call on our government to stop sending military aid. It's easy to feel powerless, but what we do now matters so very much. Daniel shared the link to the Boycott National Committee to engage in economic activism with strategic campaigns to apply pressure that way. I also want to name, if you're a therapist or a healing practitioner, there are ways to show up and be in support as a trauma counselor to families needing direct support in Palestine, as well as to people in the social movements around the world who are feeling grief as they organize. And I will just say to folks who may identify as Jews that also we might feel a particular need to speak out and be visible. And one way to do that is to join the organization Jewish Voice for Peace and to join us in the streets and to be part of what my beloved teacher, Rabbi Lynn Gottlieb, calls Shomeret Shalom, a practice of nonviolence informed by our ancestral teachings. There's so much more to say. I'll share some links in the chat, particularly to a toolkit from Beautiful Trouble on creative tactics, how we can build more art, and also to an album of music you might enjoy as you pray and act together.
Thank you, Rick. Omid?
Thank you, friends. Just a few suggestions. Being made to feel hopeless and helpless is a way of having our hearts and our souls crushed, as there are bodies that are being crushed right now. Don't give in to it. Don't. You have an extraordinary power. Look around and see communities around the world. 2 million people marched in Indonesia. 300,000 or so people marched in Washington, D.C., with hardly any coverage from mainstream media. In London, in Granada, where Daniel is. My wife, my beloved wife, who is Swiss and almost genetically neutral, she went to her first political rally took our babies into something called Moms for a Ceasefire. Replenish your heart, as Brother Malcolm would say, and we need not just the lovey-dovey ones, but we need the feisty ones, the spicy ones too. Replenish your heart by any means necessary. If you need to go for a walk in nature, go for a walk in nature. If you need to pray, pray. If you need to meditate, if you need to talk to your ancestors and ask them for guidance, if you need to plant a tree, plant a tree. If you need to hug your babies, hug your babies. Replenish your heart. Know that dignity is not a zero-sum game. There's enough food, there's enough water, there's enough love, there's enough rights. Be bold enough to speak what you know in your heart is the path forward. A future where, in the Holy Land, as our Christian friends call it, our Jewish sisters and brothers, Palestinian Christians and Palestinian Muslims can live free from apartheid, free from occupation, with absolute equality and equality of rights, privileges, and responsibilities. That's what we ask for in every democratic country in the world, and we should not be ashamed to call it and name it. Give hope to the people around you, including to the ones who are speaking out of pain right now. Know that many of your Jewish sisters and brothers are terrified and have had generational trauma activated. Know that your Palestinian sisters and brothers are reliving a second ethnic cleansing that never really stopped. Replenish your heart, link your voice, link your arm to others. Read some good books. There's no end to them. Israeli historians like Ilan Pape, Palestinians like Rashid Khalidi. The resources are out there. And as the Blessed Prophet says, speak, even if your voice shakes. But speak with love. Act in love. When that love comes out, it shows up as justice. When it goes in, it shows up as tenderness. We can do this. We can be infinitely tender and fiercely devoted to justice as long as it's mediated by love.
Thank you, Amin. And Ray, there's an ask in the chat to drop the names just of the two authors you mentioned, Omid, if you're willing. And we'll wrap momentarily. In just a moment, I'll ask Ray to invite us to share a moment and then a final prayer from Omid. From my side, I would just say, for folks who have an interest in ancestral healing, this is a perfect moment to understand why it matters and to understand how complex the dynamics are and how much is at stake. And the other thing is, like Omid was sharing, find your voice. If it feels scary to speak, like you know you have your values around it, but it's you feel daunted or worried, a lot of people speaking feel that too. And it's okay to show your love and be a little clumsy about it and learn as you go. And yeah, so find your voice if you can, and don't stop speaking up about this and things like it. And until we end all of our hazardous human supremacies that we enact on one another, it's going to be especially hard to pull it together as a species to make the changes we need to make for the Earth. So all at once, all of that. And let me turn it over. Let me say thanks to our team and for everybody supporting the event. I'm glad to be doing this. Obviously, there's no cost, but the cost is to do something tangible. You decide what it is. And let me turn it over to Ray and then to Omid for a final prayer. Thanks.
So reminiscent of some words from our tradition, B'Tselem Elohim. We are made in the image of the divine. Our lives and safety are intertwined. None of us are safe until all of us are safe. I look forward to seeing you in the streets, in the Zooms, in a massive global uprising for justice. And inshallah, may it be so in our time too, celebrating the sweetness of freedom and equality. And over to you, Omid.
Thank you so much, friends. Assalamu alaikum, shalom aleichem, and peace. May this peace be not just a destination, but also the very way that we get there. So here's a short prayer. God of the brokenhearted, you always say that you are close to those whose hearts are broken. O God of love, God of mercy, we are broken. Brokenhearted. Be with us now. Noah called on you when he said, I am overwhelmed. Help me. God of the brokenhearted, we are overwhelmed. Help us. Save us from the storm that would drown all of us. God of love, God of mercy, we are the least of these, as you said. The orphan, the poor, the needy, the refugee. In the eyes of the world, our sisters, our brothers are erased and unseen. We have no one but each other and you. Raise our dead, bathe them in your light. Protect our children. Protect our children. Our youth, our hopes, our dreams, our women, our men, our elders, our land, our olive trees, our water, our dignity, our soul. Awaken the conscience of the world. Stop the mad oppressors. Humble the arrogant. Raise up the humbled. God of love, God of mercy, be with us now. For the night is dark and filled with terrors. And so are the days. God of love, God of mercy, you are the light. Be with us now. Ease our hearts. Fill us with light. Let your peace unfold in the heart, in our families, in our communities, and on earth, so that the land may be worthy of being called a holy land.